This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Our NFL playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare and the Seattle Seahawks. Well, they're going to be watching this week as the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs congregate in Miami. Maybe they'll find Paul's flip-flops, which have been lost somewhere down there.
Who knows? Who knows where they are? We had a rolled ankle coming out of the weekend. You know, it's just it's not exactly the most ideal weekend in terms of the things that were lost along the way, but I did have a very good time.
And we will look at some of the different things that are happening in around the NFL coming up. But Kobe Bryant passed away. In my mind, the third best basketball player ever, although this might be the wrong time to start wading into that. I'm probably always going to be partial to Michael Jordan. LeBron James, I think you can make a strong and more compelling case that he's a better all-around player than Jordan was and able to do more things. But I think the six titles that MJ has and sort of the ruthlessness with which he played. And I think Kobe Bryant is right there. And I actually think that Kobe Bryant is the closest we've seen to Michael Jordan in terms of mentality. That I think that he was very similar to Jordan in that absolute confidence he had in himself to eviscerate whoever he was playing.
And that's the tricky thing. You know, as someone who's watched both the careers of Kobe and LeBron and didn't really have the proper context to know all that Jordan overcame to eventually become what he was. I only know Michael Jordan as essentially the best player in basketball who was completely unstoppable and who won a championship with his last shot. Where with Kobe, you grew up watching him and you saw the peaks where he had those teams with the Los Angeles Lakers and Shaquille O'Neal and the valleys where, I mean, there were some really rough years for him in LA. And I think for some people, they look at Kobe and maybe he's like the Indy pick as the number one. And there's also just a lot of people in the Los Angeles area that I think take him on as just uniquely LA's, and that there's a sense of, oh, well, I mean, Kobe should be in this conversation with Michael Jordan and LeBron. Come on, it's us against the world. It's LA against the rest of the country. So I think that's why that there's always going to be some people that bring him up into that. He's it's hard to compare him and LeBron. Just different styles. Because Kobe was, I'm going to beat you by myself. And I think LeBron, I think his greatest strength has been what a great teammate he is. He's a great passer. He's a guy that has also found ways to create his own team. And I think that would be one of the things that people that are pro-Kobe would hold against him. That's what I'm going to remember the most. In an era where basketball seems to be changing and guys don't stay with teams for the entirety of their careers, Kobe, one of the best players in the game, stayed in the same spot the whole way through, and he tried to get the most that he possibly could out of those often completely outmanned Laker teams. He might have tried to finagle his way out of town, and maybe those deals eventually got nixed, but this was a guy that stuck it out with one team, and there is something old school that is very appreciable about it. I like that the most, because I like that part of basketball back in the day. I understand Michael Jordan was the one that was always winning, but to have to go through all of those down moments and overcome them the next year, an entire calendar year later in the playoffs, I think are what used to make basketball so great. It's changed. The game has become better, but you don't get that anymore. You got it with Kobe Bryant.
I think that you have, in the Lakers, you have a Cadillac franchise, but there's only a couple guys who have truly been Lakers. Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, started his career with Milwaukee, and he came, but he wasn't, the guy that made that team go was Magic Johnson.
Right.
He was the most popular and the most emotional and the most resonant player. Shaquille O'Neal, when they were there and they won the three titles together, Shaquille was the more dominant of the two players, but Kobe Bryant was the one that came in with the Lakers. Shaq was the one that arrived there as a free agent. It is a Cadillac franchise, and in my mind, There's basically three guys that are quintessential Lakers, and it's Kobe Bryant, it's Magic Johnson, and it's probably Jerry West, who was the executive when the Lakers drafted him. And in cut number 12, Jerry West talked about the impact and how he felt after losing Kobe Bryant.
20 years career, one of the worst days of my life. The only thing I can compare it to is
I had a brother killed in Korea, and I'm just devastated by this news. And to watch him transform his life and career from this iconic player to have an enormous career in the media business, and to see him with his young kids, his young daughters, the joy that was in their eyes looking at their father, who obviously they loved, to the attention he paid to them, to his getting involved in promoting women's basketball. This was a man for all seasons.
The logo, Jerry West, it's the guy that the NBA logo is based on. And I saw that there was a rapper who believed that, I believe his name is Boozy, believed that Kobe should maybe be the new logo. Look, there are very few players that define a team, especially a team with as tremendous history as the Lakers have, the way that Kobe Bryant did. And I will say he is absolutely one of the most unforgettable athletes I've ever seen.
100%. I mean, this is a guy that went straight from high school to the pros, who had from his father a different understanding of the way that basketball works, having lived with him in Italy for the first, 12 years of his life or so? I'm not sure. I know that before he moved to Philadelphia and he started playing basketball in Philadelphia, that he had been moving all over the place. This is a guy who speaks Spanish and Italian. And I think he was uniquely prepared for all that being a pro was going to require coming out of high school compared to some other athletes. There are a lot, in fact, that you could argue that maybe even ones that made it that weren't ready at that phase and maybe needed a little bit of extra time. He didn't. He really didn't. I mean, he came right onto the scene, and he was, yes, a part of a pretty good Laker team that eventually developed into what it became, that dynasty team with Shaquille O'Neal and Big Shot Bob and a bunch of other really talented players. But, man, to come onto the scene the way that he did and to just be that fire that he was for such a long period of time through injuries at the very end and playing on some really just awful teams, it's truly special.
It is Danny and Gallant. Let's take a call here from Ed in Breyer. Ed, your thoughts on Kobe Bryant.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I guess I have a slightly different perspective of Kobe than a lot of folks, and thank you, Danny, for bringing up the assault in 2003, because for me that defines him a little bit more. He was never the same to me after that. You know, it just, I heard of his passing yesterday, my first thought was to his victim. What must she be thinking? You know, is she happy? Is she sad with this? I hope she's okay. You know, I guess I have a different viewpoint of Kobe. No doubting his greatness on the court, but that did taint him as far as my viewpoint, and mixed emotions for sure.
Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, Ed.
It's a fair thought to have. I mean, it's a part of the story, and I think for a lot of athletes today, if they were in a similar situation, would they be blackballed entirely by the sport? Would they be allowed to play again? I don't know the answer to that. What we do know is that something probably happened. And, I mean, there was a civil suit with a settlement that was reached. And Kobe himself said that, I thought it was consensual, but I can maybe see how, looking back, it wasn't. And I think you have to ask yourself, are you going to measure a person by one action? Or are you going to measure a person by the entirety of his actions? And that is a question that is totally up to you to answer. It really is. I'm not trying to lead you in any one way or the other. Because, you know, for I think everyone until what happened yesterday, I think it did change just who he was. For me, it did. I remember I had as a kid, I had a Kobe Bryant jersey. I know that vanished from my house in 2003. Only Kitsy knows the answer as to what happened with that. I'm pretty sure she got rid of it. I actually talked with her last night. And honestly, I don't blame her. I mean, it was a huge scandal, and it took a while as well to get through. And I'm not saying that should be the only thing that we remember about him, but it is something that was a big part of his life journey, about his just entire career in the NBA.
The impact that athletes, especially as an athlete, is prominent. I would say it's like movie stars or other famous people, but it's not, because we see them in spots where they're more vulnerable. We see them, we get to see them in their, on the court, speaking their attempts at success. We get to see them in their moments of failure. We get to watch the process of them trying to achieve and how all of the different things that they go through in the efforts to do that. I find myself fascinated by that idea of the mentality that it takes for someone to become totally dominant. And does that have, and the different impacts that has and the different ways it takes. I think Kobe as a competitor on the court is a fascinating person to watch. He's not that likable.
Not at
all.
The
way he competes, the demands that he puts, and I know that there's guys that played with him that did not like playing with him. And there would be an element where you're like, can you blame him? And then you'd also think, well, can you blame Kobe? Like,
right.
Is it Kobe's fault that he was extremely demanding and difficult on Smush Parker? There's a lot of different things that are there. I think that in moments like this, and that's what I thought about yesterday, is that you got to watch someone who achieved on the court at an incredibly, almost virtually unprecedented level. Like the things that he did and the fact that he went from winning a championship, three championships with Shaq, to having that franchise rebuilt around him, never leaving, winning two more championships, and watching what he did is, it's pretty remarkable. And I am sad that we're going to miss his commentary on the game, because even as I complained about him being too involved after he stepped away, it would have been interesting to see. He still had more to give to the game. There's no doubt about that.
He is very, I think, insightful, because I think he's very curious and he's constantly looking for different sources of information to make himself a more intelligent person. And I will go back again to Bill Simmons talking about an off-the-record conversation that he had with Kobe Bryant for about 30 minutes that Kobe was like, yeah, you can't write an article about this at the end of the conversation. And I just think about how he was so competitive, even in the quest for more information and ways to improve himself. He wasn't exactly the most forthcoming and sharing on that front. But yeah, to have a guy like him talking about basketball just going forward, I mean, it's the kind of person that you would like, even if he maybe was a little bit too involved at the end. And I mean, it's very clear that he had a huge impact on so many people with that kind of mindset.
I find myself, where did you hear that? Did Simmons just talk about
that? He just talked about it on his podcast that released last night, yes.
I'm going to have to listen to that, because I'm fascinated to know what Kobe's thoughts about leadership would have been,
yes,
or what that might have
been,
because that's extremely interesting. It is Danny and Gallant. As I mentioned, our NFL playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
There's no easy way to transition from this.
We're going to talk football now.
We are, but I'm gonna ease us into the water, because Pete Carroll, who was coaching at the Pro Bowl, spoke with Omar Ruiz of the NFL Network and had some really good thoughts about Kobe and his time knowing him.
Pete, I know you shared the spotlight there in L.A. with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers there during your time at USC. What was your reaction when you heard about Kobe's passing?
You know, we don't have a reaction to even define. You know, he has been such a big part of this whole generation's life in sports and beyond sports. He's been such an iconic figure to us. We've cited Kobe so many times, and because of who he is and because of the extraordinary nature of his makeup and all. And when it hit our locker room, our guys were crushed.
That idea of sort of someone who is the athlete's athlete, much in the way people talk about a comedian's comedian or an actor's actor, where people that are achieving at an incredibly rare level, they look to that person as like, oh, that guy's at a different level. Kobe was that for this generation of athletes. And I thought Pete put that pretty poignantly.
Yeah, and there are so many people that just looked at the way that he approached it and tried to do it themselves. And here's the other thing about it. It's very hard to do. I mean, who has actually been able to successfully take on the mama mentality and carry it out in the same way that Kobe probably could?
One of the things about that, there are very few people that can stand to be disliked by their peers.
100%.
People tend to, and when they are disliked, they become very defensive about that and resentful. A lot of people will say they don't care about what other people think about them. Now, I do believe, and look, this isn't to say, because I know people who did not like playing with Kobe, but Kobe really didn't. Like, if he thought he was right about something or thought he was correct about and that you were slacking in some way, he was relentless, and he didn't care if that hurt your feelings.
Right, and it's hard for people to accept that. It really is. And to actually say, oh, yeah, you're right. I would wonder about some of the people who played with Kobe Bryant and grew tired of him over time. If they had a perspective somewhere else, I would like to know how they felt about their time with Kobe.
Like, did they miss him?
Right. Did they miss it? Did they miss the coaching that they clearly were not asking for from their colleague?
Back to the Pro Bowl. The AFC wins 38-33.
We got to see an onside kick attempt, but it wasn't an onside kick. It was a 4th and 15 from their own 25. Do you like that as a substitute for the onside kick? We need to get some element of the onside kick back.
I want it back, but, I mean, you're going to take the foot out of football? Come on. I mean, my big thing is it's 4th and 15, and I think that the good quarterbacks are going to be able to be very successful in this situation. And I also think it's one of those plays that when you have pass interference and you have illegal contact and you're talking about a play that involves taking a shot down the field, I don't think it is as random and as difficult to pull off as an onside kick was. And I really do wonder about the idea of a super offense like the Kansas City Chiefs saying, yeah, we're up 21-7 at halftime. Let's go for it to go up 28-7 in the second half.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because you don't have a provision. Like, do you have to be trailing to be able to do that? You shouldn't. You should be able to just choose.
Exactly. I mean, that should be a part of it. And I think that certain teams could really take advantage of this if they have the horses to do it.
Let's play it out a little bit more. What's the maximum amount of points that you could score in the final minute? Because the thing about onside kicks is that the maximum, it basically would guarantee you one additional possession. But then for you to score in 15 seconds would take another, it would take a ridiculously long completion after recovering the onside kick. Here it's just one lightning in a bottle. Like, you could conceivably score 24 points in the final minute.
You could score on the 4th and 15. I mean,
yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You could score. You could have, what, 3 straight scoring plays?
Theoretically. Now, again, you have to have, like, Patrick Mahomes and a Tyreek Hill or someone like that that can completely break a field in half. But I would be very curious to see how a good offense would handle this. In the past, I've always been of the belief that if it's a two-minute game, you could theoretically score 14 points to tie up. And if it's a one-minute game, you have a very slim chance, and I'm talking closer to like a minute 20, of like getting out of an 11-point hole or something like that. But with this,
I'm all for it.
I would never want to play Kansas City again.
Well, you just got to talk to Sherman and get the proper game plan for beating Patrick Mahomes. Apparently, he's telling that to Bleacher Report.
Yeah, you know what, Richard, good luck with that going up against someone as fast as Tyreek Hill when you had the issues with Andy Isabella. Just leave it at that.
Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, he is attempting to become the second youngest quarterback in NFL history to win a Super Bowl. He'd be second to Ben Roethlisberger only, who won it when he was 23.
That's interesting. And Ben Roethlisberger has the asterisk of he was god-awful terrible in that.
He was
hideous. He was horrendous.
That game. I mean, I know that you guys all have a different perspective. Having watched it from afar, I was furious with the outcome of that game. The refs blew it. Steelers, that wasn't that good of a Steelers team.
You can't see my air quotes on the radio.
Oh, yes.
One.
Very heavy air quotes there. Mahomes is the best in the game. And, I remember last year being, and maybe this was just because I was in Houston and people were unwilling to admit that Patrick Mahomes is better than Deshaun Watson, but I said, we shouldn't be afraid to admit it right now. I mean, that arm strength, that mobility, who's better? Who's got a better array of talents to work with? And on top of that, one of the best offensive minds in NFL history and Andy Reid working with him. It's like the perfect storm.
Andy Reid, this is the first time he's been back to the Super Bowl since 2005.
Got there with Donovan McNabb, who Philadelphians hate for whatever reason, but they also hate Andy Reid.
They don't like him. Let me ask you this. Over or under, does Patrick Mahomes end up with more Super Bowl trophies than Peyton Manning? He's really young right now. He's in his first Super Bowl. He got there sooner than Peyton Manning did. Do you think he ends up winning 3 titles?
It's a tough one to answer because we asked probably the same thing about Dan Marino. How many Super Bowls is he going to get to, and he never got to another one again? I will say yes.
Okay. I'm putting that down. I'm writing that down. We're going to put that in the time capsule. The Al Gore. Put it in a lockbox.
He only needs to get 3. So that's all we're asking. You. Only yeah. three. Only three Super Bowls. No yeah. big deal.
Thanks for the smiles, guys. I think this is the first time I got one today. When asked at the Pro Bowl, a few different players were discussing the 17-game schedule, and most, even though it means an extra paycheck, are voting against it.
I'm surprised by that. And I can understand why, because I think a lot of them look at the idea of 17 games as another potential injury risk. But I think that there's a lot of money to be had by having this 17th game. I think a lot of them would be played at neutral sites. And I would wonder if you were to ask every single player in the NFL how they truly feel about this, if some of the guys that are likely going to have three-year careers would say, yes, we want more money. Injuries happen. It's a part of the game. But the more money we can possibly get, I would say go for it.
I'm convinced that the players will accept this, and I think they should advocate for getting a higher percentage
yes.
of the proceeds. Not just getting, because what the NFL is saying to them is, hey, we're going to give you more money. Like, everybody's going to make more money. The person who's sacrificing to play a 17th game is not the owners, and it's not the infrastructure of the team. It's the players. It's the players who are already absorbing the injury rates. And I don't think saying, like, okay, we're just going to extend the percentage that we're getting and it's going to impact us more profoundly than anybody else here, they should get a higher percentage.
I agree with that, and they always should. But the problem is, because there are so many players in the union, it is really difficult for work stoppage to be, I think, effective.
Why is the NFL union weaker than the MLB? And other than, is it just the history of there was a lawyer that was in charge, the lawyer that was in charge of the Players Association in baseball, Marvin Miller, was just better at it? Why is it? Is it something about the nature of the game and the careers in football are shorter?
Yes, I think it's just because of how violent football is compared to baseball. And from a baseball perspective, I don't know how they were able to get it done, but I mean, they had successful strikes that yes. I think made the league, the owners, the commissioner look weak. I mean, go back to the mid-90s. It was, the game was in trouble, and players were like, screw it, we don't care what happens at the end of this season as much as we care about the bottom line. The bottom line grew exponentially after that. The problem for football is there are too many players in the league that are not going to be willing to make a sacrifice for the players of the future. And I would, from their perspective, in their shoes, I would ask anyone if you would be willing to make the same sacrifices for the future of the game when you've got a family to provide for, when you are trying to earn your living the best way you can, but you don't know how much time you might have in the league. I would say a lot of them would say no to that.
I've got my perfect solution. As my labor lawyer hat, do you want me to tell you the solution?
Yes.
For how it could happen?
Do it.
We'll do that next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I got criticized that the lead-in teaser was poor. You give your title to your solution, then say, and I'll tell you why as soon as we get back. P.S. I turned my radio off. So that didn't work for that guy.
Cool story.
Here is how you solve the labor crisis in the NFL. You get the 32 quarterbacks to unionize, and you get the 32 quarterbacks to say, look, you can play with all the other guys and they can continue to get their checks. But until you get a better overall contract for all the players, the 32 quarterbacks are not going to play. You don't need everybody. Missing those quarterbacks would dilute the impact of the game enough. Like, it would just take them. Because the problem with football is that it's hard to convince guys to miss game checks in a league where the average career is less than four seasons.
Yeah.
But quarterbacks, A, make the most money, B, have the longest careers. All you have to do is to get them to say, all right, guys, we're going to take one for the team. We're going to be the point of the spear. Not everybody has to strike. We just have to strike. And you guys can keep playing and cashing checks. and understand that we're all in this together, and what we're getting is going to raise the level for all the other players. It would take selfless quarterbacks, Paul.
Selfless quarterbacks. Well, let's be honest. I'm not being selfless here. There's very selfish quarterbacks. And if that rule happens, Danny, we will need to have an amendment, the Paul Gallant amendment to the National Football League, where quarterbacks can no longer give themselves up. We need this as a part of it. And that would be, I hope, what the players union would push for, more than necessarily a bigger piece of the pie, more about quarterbacks deserve to be punished just as much as any other player.
No, it would be the owners that would advocate for that then, because the quarterbacks, the quasi-management, has been turned against them. So they're like, fine, you don't get your get-out-of-jail-free. I'm going to slide feet first and then end up not getting a hit anymore. But I think it would – I honestly think it would work. If you had a players' association that unionized and had two tiers of the union, it would be the standard workaday Joes that need their paychecks, and then it would be the guys that are going to be the vanguard, that are going to advocate for the improvement of all workers. And I think that you could take some significant steps that for some reason football and its union have not been able to make in comparison, especially to baseball, but also to basketball.
Danny is pro caste system. That's what we're learning.
It's not pro caste. It would be like, with great power comes great responsibility, because the 360 says starting QBs don't have an incentive to do it. You're right, because they have it well taken care of, and in some ways they've been bought off. And if you had them sit out, everybody else wouldn't have to sit out. The quality of play, if you just were missing the 32 starting quarterbacks, would be enough that I think that the owners would have to take seriously the demands of the other players.
Would it be comparable enough, though, where people would still be able to enjoy the sport? Say all the quarterbacks just decided to hold out, and now you've got a bunch of backups that are in the game. I think for certain teams, like, I don't know, the entire history of the Chicago Bears, they would be very open to the idea of a quarterbackless league, and they would totally be cool with the better chance of winning a Super Bowl that would come with the year where all the quarterbacks decide, we're going to sit out and get more money.
Could you imagine if it wasn't like a 9-game season, like whatever it was in 1982 when it was shortened, that it was actually a quarterbackless year?
16 games with no quarterbacks. I mean, it would be kind of funny at first.
It would be. Realistically, would it ever work? No. But I think that that is because the problem, and we're going to see it again, that the players union will run into is that in order to affect a significant underlying change, I think a union has to be willing to miss games. And right now, anytime that the NFL has gotten close to that point, their constituency, there's too many guys that need the paychecks. And you understand why, because their earning window, you say like one season or missing half a year would be a small sacrifice in the longer scheme of things for the union. You're right. But for a player, there would be some guys whose careers would never recover, let alone that they're missing what half of one of the only three or four seasons that they can expect to earn that kind of money.
Right. And, you know, it takes a lot to ask someone to say, yeah, you're not going to earn money for this year for something that you might not ever see the benefits of. That said, if you've gone across locker rooms in the NFL, whether it's the Texans locker room or the Seahawks locker room, the writing has actually been on the wall. There are signs saying it's time to start saving money. I don't know if that actually means that players are going to be willing, when push comes to shove, to actually make that kind of sacrifice and say, you know what, I'm not going to play because I'm going to get more money out of this. That remains to be seen, but I think they've been trying to make players at the very least aware of it for the next time that we have a potential labor stoppage.
It is Danny and Gallant, and we talked most of this morning, almost all of this morning, about the passing of Kobe Bryant, who's 41 years old, a helicopter accident yesterday morning. I think it was, about 9:45, just before 10 a.m. Pacific time. There were 9 people in the helicopter, including Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, who's known as Gigi, 13 years old. Also John Altobelli, who was a junior college baseball coach, along with his wife Carrie, their daughter Alyssa, and Christina Mauser, who is a grade school girls basketball coach in the Orange County area. And I was sad. I was sad at the idea of these families having these gaping holes, these absences that are going to be felt and they're going to reverberate. I was really sad for all of Kobe's fans and the people that he had touched and inspired, and sad for the basketball community, because Kobe was enmeshed in basketball in a way that very few players, even great players, are. He cast a shadow like that, and he was involved. And him sitting courtside to congratulate LeBron James, read Bill Plaschke's column this morning in the LA Times, and that he had called to interview Kobe in anticipation of James passing him on the career scoring list. And And Kobe making the point that Laker fans needed to be patient with LeBron and needed to welcome him and kind of transitioning to this elder statesman, talking about patience and acceptance as, and letting someone grow because he had the chance to grow in LA.
Yeah. And look, that's the kind of, that is the kind of, I think, impact that he had just on that area, and perhaps more than Magic Johnson. I honestly don't know, because I'm not someone who lived in Los Angeles, but I would wonder about the people that lived in the area, how many of them would remember fondly Magic as their favorite Laker, and how many would remember Kobe as their favorite Laker. One of the things about history is that typically we do forget things that happened in the past, and I know that there's an entire generation of people in Los Angeles my age that have never gotten to see Magic play. They got to see Kobe play. They got to see 20 years of it. They got to see an unbelievable fire towards being perfect and being really close to it over the course of those 20 years. And it's something that's going to be felt for a really long time, not just there, but across the sport and across all sports.
I remember specifically exactly where I was when Magic Johnson announced that he was HIV positive. I was sitting in the bedroom of Davey Bamford, who was my friend in high school at Aptos High School, and each of us had our hands resting inside buckets of salt water, which we'd retrieved from the Pacific Ocean. We had been chased several evenings previous at Halloween. We had been chased through Poison Oak by some people who were in pursuit of us. And I had, it was the most painful. If anybody's ever had Poison Oak, it's an awful rash. It's weepy. It's like greasy and oozy. And both of us had it between our fingers because we had like rolled down a hill and in sort of having our hands out in front of us. And I remember just sitting there and thinking about how nothing would ever be the same. And I guess that this hearing that Kobe Bryant had died was a similar feeling of, oh my gosh, I can't, there's a level of disbelief. And some of it is because it's a professional athlete who had made a career out of sort of defying any expectation and any limitation placed upon him. I know people aren't immortal or invulnerable. I know that death happens to all of us. But realizing and thinking that, that wasn't something that I really ever considered a possibility or thought about. And I'm really sad for all of the people, specifically his family and friends, but a region in general and a basketball community. It's really sad to think about that permanent of a loss coming that unexpectedly, that inexplicably. And I don't have any answers about greater reasons or what it says to say other than, man, it stinks. And that I feel sad for everyone who has been profoundly impacted by that.
I think we all look for a way to explain it to ourselves, to understand it because of how abrupt it was and because of how shocking it was. It's hard, even when you know this is a human being, to not think of this person as being close to immortal. And at the same time, to just process the idea that not only have they left us, but they left us now. And this wasn't because of a variety of issues or an illness or something surprising. It's just, I'm waking up on a Sunday and I'm finding out that Kobe Bryant is dead and that eight other people are dead, and there is nothing else to say. It's just awful. It's people that left us before we had a chance to say goodbye. And I am with you, Danny. For those families, I don't know what they're going through, but I wish I could give them a hug. It's just truly awful. And man, just a lot of disappointment and sadness. That's all you can really say about it.
It is Danny and Gallant. We will raise flags. I don't think there will be any flags thrown. We're going to raise flags next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. Usually this time, we use this to second guess ourselves, to question others, occasionally to acknowledge our own mistakes.
Oh.
Especially if we're Lydia Cruz, constantly acknowledging
it's
our
mistakes.
It's
just known as the Lydia Cruz flag.
Yeah. But today, I think we're all going to be in agreement that it's time to raise a flag. And honestly, that flag is only going to go to half mast because it's a day where I think the entire sports community is sad. And it's not that tragedy doesn't happen elsewhere or is more significant when it happens in sports. We deal with sports. And the benefits of that is that we don't as often have to deal with real life and death situations. We deal with outcomes, victories. And it doesn't mean it's not serious because people get hired and they get fired. We do have deaths. We do have to deal with grief and those things. But it tends to be a little less serious on our side of the aisle. So when something like this happens, it in some ways is tougher for us to know how to put it in perspective because it isn't just a result in a scoreboard. It's a family and it's a father and it's children and it's really, really sad what happened. I'm going to start. I'm going to raise a flag for Kobe Bryant and the legacy that he was beginning to impact when it comes to women's basketball. And his daughter, Gianna, Gigi, who was aboard the helicopter and they were flying to her game. I think we were going to see Kobe Bryant take a significantly different approach and make a huge impact when it came to girls and then women's basketball. And I think that it's something that's very important. I've always felt that if you wanted to teach basketball, go see a WNBA game. Do not watch the NBA. Basketball, as the game is intended to be played, the strategy, the execution, all of those things that if you're in the NBA, you are such an incredible shooter. You are so incredibly tall. It is the rarest of rare talents that in some ways conventional basketball structure doesn't nearly matter as much. You're seeing it now. It's dunks and three-pointers. That's what happens. The women's game is basketball at a much better level. It's a better played team game. And I'm really sad we're not going to get to see the legacy that his daughter forged and the impact he was going to have on women's basketball.
Well said. I feel the same way about it. If I had to raise a flag today, part of it, shout out Lydia Cruz playing a little Bill Withers, Lean On Me. Love that song. I think it's a really good song. One of those songs gets you in your feels in a moment like this. I also want to raise a flag for Kobe Bryant being unapologetically Kobe Bryant throughout his career. There are many examples of this, just blunt honesty and telling you when you weren't good. I really enjoyed hearing a couple of stories. I think it was Bill Simmons saying that he once got a text from Kobe to talk about leadership. And Kobe, when he had sent the first text, Bill Simmons was like, no way, this isn't you. And Kobe basically responded saying, listen, you Boston, you know what? You Boston bleep, this is definitely me. Or, like you saw yesterday on SportsCenter, where Spike Lee said Kobe would always go up to him and say, the first time he saw him, Spike, the Knicks suck. Every single time he saw Spike Lee. Fantastic. Just a very funny story, and I think, you know, for all the sadness, it's important to remember the funny moments. And he was a character. He had a personality, and I liked that part of his personality, even though I was probably rooting against him for the entirety of his career.
Lydia?
You guys have said it so well, more poetically than I could. Individually, I guess, you know, want to raise a flag to all of you guys because getting on the air and talking about a difficult subject, it's just tough. And I'm lucky to have you guys and the support you bring to me personally, but to one another is pretty cool. I also want to thank Taylor Jacobs for coming on my show, The Blitz, this morning, even when he felt pretty emotional coming in early to talk about Kobe and his complicated legacy. And he also brought up LifeWire at that time, and an organization that we've worked with here at 710 ESPN before, because if this story does bring up or a different reaction to you because you have experienced some sort of trauma, LifeWire does have a 24-hour helpline, 425-746-1940. They are there to help. So if this brings up something, some other types of feelings for you, they're there to support you. And ultimately, I also just want to thank everybody who has compassion for people who might not feel the same way that they do. I think that's so important in these instances. We're getting, you know, a lot of people feel very passionately, but if you can listen to other people and allow them to have their grief in the way that they have it, I think that, and it's different than yours, I think that's really important in this time.
Lydia is so nice. I'm going to say it differently. If you feel compelled to yell at someone today or express indignation about what they think, maybe don't say that out loud. Like, maybe just if you've got a really strong thing that you want to yell at someone about, maybe don't today. Like, tomorrow you can go back to being the same jerk you always are. But today, if you have a moment where you want to scream at someone about how wrong they are, maybe just don't.
Also, Jessamy? Well said. That was very well said. I'm going to raise the flag for those who will continue forging on in Kobe's path. Obviously, he had done a tremendous amount, and he had the power to really impact women's basketball, and he was obviously extremely invested in it. I think that there will be people in the wake of tragedy who will continue and pick up because of the immense void that he has left. So I'm raising a flag for the post-NBA Kobe and what he was doing, and those who I imagine will come in droves to pick that up, because it was just gaining so much steam. Obviously, for everyone else who was lost in that tragic helicopter crash, just all the victims and their families, obviously the world is sending their thoughts and prayers, and that's probably only going to help so much at this time. So just praying for all of them.
Yeah. Thanks, Jess. As we were all saying this, I just realized something. I like women's tennis more than I like men's tennis. And I don't know if many people know. I like women's tennis. I think it's a more exciting product. I think it's better because of the rallies. I think men's tennis, almost exclusively, it's so dependent on the serve and whether or not you're able to return the serve and what position you're in. I think women's tennis is more competitive. And there is part of me that believes 15 years from now, I will be saying the exact same thing about women's basketball compared to men's basketball. That I like women's basketball better because it's more competitive and it's less about one exceptional talent that if you've either got it or you don't. That you're either able to shoot three-pointers from 28 feet or you're not. And that's really what it comes down to and pretty much all the game's about, because I do think that the women's game, it's possible, will be a more competitive, better sport to watch.
I can totally see that happening. I hope it does not turn that way in the National Basketball Association, where everyone's just shucking threes from that midway line and
they'll
saying...
They'll be doing that and drawing fouls and complaining.
Everyone from the half-court line is just yelling, Kobe! Every single time they possibly can. Please don't turn it to that. Although, keep the Kobe call going.
That's going to do it for us. Love everybody who is part of the show, especially Jessamyn and Lydia Cruz. Thank you very much for listening. We will talk more sports tomorrow, but I don't think there's enough that can be said about showing some empathy. He is Paul Gallant, and he's still looking for his flip-flops, which are somewhere in Florida.
Yes, I am. I am. And he is Danny O'Neill, and he, a very compassionate and empathetic person, I think will share my thoughts in saying, when you get home tonight, hug your family members, hug your close ones. You never know how much time you have on this earth, and live whatever moment you have to the highest degree that you possibly can. So long, farewell, until we meet again. Y'all have a good one.